Our reading this morning is Bless the World by the Reverend Rebecca Parker. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gifts of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting, all of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question. What will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward in the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of the broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, numbness, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude, to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of the earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. This week, our congregation was responsible for leading the last Thursday Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice Vigil at the ICE office on Portland's waterfront. This vigil was different than other vigils because of Ruben Vera Perez. Ruben is a dark-skinned man, tall, with a square face and a friendly smile. He was once from Mexico, but 25 years ago, he came to the United States to work. He came without documents. Well, here he met Maria, and they have been married for 21 years, just this last week. They have 7 children, including a granddaughter who they are raising as their own. Several years ago, he was assaulted in California and has suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. His family moved to Astoria, Oregon, to get away from the crime scene, and they have lived there for 4 years. 2 years ago, his brother, a pastor, who was visiting Mexico for his 30th wedding anniversary, was killed for his car. Not long after his death, his brother's 23-year-old son was taken from his home in Mexico and killed. Then on December 14th, Mariah was driving in Astoria with Ruben in the passenger seat. A car with flashing lights pulled her over. They didn't tell her why. They just asked for her driver's license. Then an unmarked car pulled in. Two people got out. Rubens opened Rubens' door, got him out of the car, and put him in the other vehicle. It was ICE. They were detaining Ruben for possible deportation. Mariah asked to hug him goodbye, and she was told no. He's been at the for-profit detention center in Tacoma ever since. In Astoria, his family spent Christmas without him. And then Maria spent their 21st wedding anniversary alone. The family depends on his paycheck. He was offered a job at the detention center for $1 a day. But if he wants sugar and cream in his coffee, that costs 75 cents. Long distance calls are 15 cents a minute, and the family is quickly being unable to afford them. Maria, three of Ruben's daughters, and two of his grandsons joined us at the ICE vigil to ask for our support in talking to Senator Merkley's staff and encouraging them to intervene. Most Americans, including Merkley, have been outraged at the separation of parents and children at the southern border. However, those same separations have been happening in our communities for years, and they are now escalating. People who have lived here for years with families who are U.S. citizens are more often targeted by ICE than ever before. I wore my new clergy collar to the vigil, and I prayed. And I shared the clearest tenets of our faith, that each person has worth and dignity, and we are all interconnected. I said that tearing children from their families hurts the parent and the child, devastates them, in fact. But it also devastates the person who did the tearing. I said that turning up the air conditioning to torture asylum seekers and detainees, which is an incredibly common practice in our country, hurts the immigrants and the person who turns up the air conditioning. These acts hurt everyone, including us, who pay for them to happen with our tax dollars. I believe that when the interconnected web is torn and tattered by oppression and bullying and cruelty, and we pull away from those torn edges, look away, our hearts are less open, and we are less joyful and less happy. This week I've been fighting a cold. Perhaps you can hear it in my voice. And I've been living with that exhausted, achy feeling that you get when you're not quite sick enough to not work, but you aren't well enough to actually work very well. On Tuesday and Wednesday, I had almost continual back-to-back meetings, and I really didn't have much time to tackle the 50 things that were on my to-do list. And some of these were pretty important, like choosing the hymns for today's service and making sure that there was teachers and lessons for our children and youth today. And there were other things on those to-do lists that I have promised myself to do and that I have actually promised many of you that I would do. I fantasize at times about winning the lottery, but my real fantasy is always about time, more time. I wake up and then suddenly it's 3 p.m. It's January 5th and, wow, it's February 1st. A time demon haunts me. There isn't enough. There isn't enough. There isn't enough. You won't get it all done. You are going to fail. I was at the vigil, and I said to people that we are at our best when we tend to the web of interconnections in all the ways that we do, through compassion and kindness, through actions. And that is actually my real faith. It is what I truly believe we are called to do. Then the vigil was over, and I was asked if I would go with the family to Senator Merkley's office. And that time demon came rushing right out, really anxious and distressed. Your hours are planned. There aren't enough of them. You won't get things done. Going is completely irresponsible. You will be letting people down. But I also knew that my going really mattered. The symbol of the clergy, since I was wearing my clergy collar, I really had it, really actually matter in such interactions. And I knew that I would be the comfort to the family. I knew I already had been. So what was my commitment in that moment? My to-do list with very real responsibilities, or this family? James Luther Adams was a theologian and ethicist from the middle of the 20th century. He was a Unitarian Universalist minister and served two congregations before he settled into writing and teaching. While he was a religious liberal, he also critiqued religious liberalism. One of his concerns was the lack of religious liberal commitment. He talked about the importance of commitment that make you or your life different after you make them. The commitment is a decision to live differently than you did before. And most of us have made such commitments to a marriage, or to school, or to a job, or to a child. And I hope that joining WOLF, as so many people did today, is such a commitment. Now, this community is part of the fabric of your life, richer and fuller than before, but also requiring time and energy. Adams would argue that one of the struggles for religious liberals is commitment to our own values and principles. If we commit to acting as if each and every person has worth and dignity, how would we be different than we were before? What allegiances would we make? How would we spend our time? How would we spend our money? Adams spent over a year in Germany in the late 1930s, and he said of his own changing commitment, "Let me put it autobiographically and say that in Nazi Germany, I soon came to the question, what is it in my preaching and my political action that would stop this?" It is a liberal attitude to say that we keep ourselves informed and read the best papers on these matters and perhaps join a voluntary association now and then. But to be involved with other people so that it costs and so that one exposes the evils of society requires something like conversion, something more than an attitude. It requires a sense that there's something wrong. And I must be different than the way I have been. I must be different than the way that I have been. I stood with that time demon howling in my face, and I gently blew her away. As controlled as my life is by fear of not enough time or getting enough done, it really wasn't even hard. Out of the 25 to 30 people at that vigil, 7 were from WOLF. Not many people stayed to accompany Maria and her family to Senator Merkley's office, but everyone from WOLF did. And another member joined the congregation later. I want to be a person who stands at the edges of that torn web with the oppressed every time. But it can be so hard to do. Life is so distracting. We have so many things to do with our time and our energy and our talent and our money. But there they were, the good, generous people from WOLF, who I trust. They were making commitments with their time, and this made it so easy for me to live up to my real and true commitment. This, for me, is the reason that we need faith communities. Faith communities remind us week after week, month after month, year after year, of how we most want to be. They help us sort out what is important and help us make decisions and commitments that transform and change who we are and how we live our lives. And how they do this is through the power of relationships. James Luther Adams believed that faith communities bring forth in us the motivations to make the commitments that transform us. Being together intentionally allows us to live our deepest values and be the people that we most want to be. Decades after Adams wrote, neuroscientists confirmed his belief. Research shows that people transform each other's brains by causing changes in each other's neuropathways as they engage with one another. Some neuroscientists say there is no such thing as a separate brain. We are all interconnected neurologically. It is compassion in the form of love and warmth and kindness and hospitality that prime our neuropathways to change, whereas fear and negative emotions freeze us into our neuropathways as they have already formed. And it's ideas and conversations and stories and modeling other people's actions that create neuropathways, which is the biological form that we experience as transformation. Truly, it is really true that the kinds of relationships that we have and the people we have them with and their nature make us who we are. This week, I read all the possibility spirals that we created last month. What's possible, we asked ourselves. What feels possible in this moment? What feels possible in this group of people after this particular service? These were some of the things that you said. Being delighted, sharing joy, helping people, commitment, contentment, respect, hope, listening, mindfulness, beauty, abundance, vulnerability, moving outside of one's comfort zone, and sharing music. You shared possibilities for our culture, transforming climate change, stopping oppression, electing more progressive women, a new economic system based on compassion, and starting a community resource pool for sharing things instead of purchasing everything that we think we need. But the words that came up over and over, on spiral after spiral, were kindness, compassion, and peace. And this congregation is filled with people who are different than what our consumeristic, oppressive culture teaches people to be. Independent, perfect, a narrow definition of what is normal, filled up with things and experiences. Instead, we want to be people who are open to life and able to connect with the interconnected web of all being, whether that be the trees outside this building or the neuropathways among us. In fact, we are a congregation that wants to bless the world. Last Thursday, after we left Merkley's office, a couple of us stopped at Starbucks. And on the wall was a beautiful mural that said, "One cup, one world." The interconnected web right there in the biggest coffee chain in the United States. Do you know what the Starbucks mission is? To inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time. You take out the words "one cup" and it could be the mission of a Unitarian Universalist congregation. But it's not. Because the real purpose of Starbucks is to make money. It is one of the ways that consumer culture takes over real needs that we have, real beliefs that we have, interconnection and spirit, and uses it for consumer benefit. And Starbucks, truly, it can fuel us with caffeine and sugar, and sometimes that really can feel like inspiration. It's true. But it truly does not inspire or nurture the human spirit. Because the chain lacks one of the most important ingredients for doing so. sustained relationships that focus us on what really matters about being people on this planet. Relationships that remind us that we are loved. We, each of us, has inherent worth and dignity. And that we are powerful. And that we can bless the world, both by our presence and what we do. WWOOF matters. The world needs our vision of societies where each person has worth and dignity, and the interconnected web is always cared for. Our world needs the possibilities we see: kindness, compassion, and peace. WWOOF matters. Here, what we do is transform ourselves so that we can be the people we want to be and who the world most needs. We plant seeds of inspiration in our Sunday services, in our book groups, conversations, and actions. We grow in compassionate community, in small groups, such as chalice circles, which, by the way, there are sign-up sheets downstairs for the new spring season. Sign up. But also in our Buddhist groups and our humanist groups and all the groups in this congregation where we speak our own truth, where we listen to each other and explore ideas. That is truly the transformational place of our congregation. And we bloom in service to the wider world through our two-minute actions, contributions to people in need, focused action on immigration, climate, LGBTQT issues, and racial justice. We live in covenant because we know how we are together makes changing lives possible. Intentional, beloved community matters because it changes us and makes us able to create such communities outside these walls. So today is the beginning of WWOOF's stewardship campaign. And Tracy gave us such a wonderful presentation about what it means in our history. And so each of us over the next several weeks will be asked to be stewards of this organization and make contributions of time and money so that it can thrive. I'm going to ask you as you contribute, as you consider what you want your contribution to be in terms of time and or money, I ask you to consider why WWOOF matters. Why does it matter that this congregation exists here in the West Hills of Portland? And why should you support it? And I hope many things will come to you. And as they do, I also ask you to remember Ruben and Maria Perez and their family. 8 members of WWOOF chose to be with them through a particularly painful, oppressive, horrific life moment. Each of us decided to be with them rather than to do all the other things we could have done. And we did that because this community helped us commit and stay committed to our deepest values. I was able to be there as a minister, standing next to Maria, helping her with her words when the emotion was too intense, offering a calming presence. And I was not there only because this congregation has such a steadfastness to its values, but I was there because of your generosity in hiring a minister at all. WWOOF is a great gift. When you consider during this stewardship season your commitment to WWOOF, consider what a gift this congregation is for others. The people next to you this morning, the people in your neighborhood, in our community, who really need a community based in values and compassion. and to our children and to their children. Consider Wolf's vision and how it is so much a vision that this world needs. Choose to bless the world. Let us all choose to bless the world. Amen.